At lunch yesterday, Ed Meese started off with some local color about whether certain events associated with Louisiana are consistent with the rule of law, and of course he mentioned Huey Long and mentioned that that was by way of contrast, indicating what wasn't the rule of law. And then he went off, after mentioning Mardi Gras, to discuss jazz. Well, I want to come back and focus on Mardi Gras because long ago when I came to Louisiana and I visited my first Mardi Gras, I drew some interesting conclusions about what the founders must have been thinking. I went down to Mardi Gras the first time and I had this attitude of how could any rational person engage in such disorderly conduct? And after about a half hour, I was out there like everybody else, jumping and yelling, throw me something, mister, for these stupid beads. And since then, since then I've witnessed many stuffy lawyers, generals, and other people who wouldn't be caught dead doing such things. In Louisiana. And it brought to mind the power of the crowd, and that otherwise rational people will do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. And that certainly is a moment that is reflected on in the Federalist, especially Federalist 10. But there are other lessons to be drawn about this, and one of the main ones is the distortion of the media. And that is, most of you have this idea about Mardi Gras that it is this wonderful debauchery. But the fact of the matter is that most of Mardi Gras is a wonderful family event. And it all depends on where you focus your camera. And of course, the media focuses on the debauchery in the quarter. But if you go up the rest of St. Charles Street, you'll find it is a family event. But they are all in various states of disorderly conduct. Now, you would suppose that maybe you would have to have, certainly if Leno were chief of police, you would have to have a great armada of police officers to control this disorderly conduct. But in point of fact, one of the notable things is that despite all of its failings, the New Orleans police is admired around the country, and police departments come here to learn how to engage in crowd control because they're very successful in crowd control because they take a very laissez-faire attitude towards the conduct. And while there are few arrests, there is no major problems. Now imagine if the federal government were to get involved because all of a sudden the media decided that this was a bad thing. We would soon have some Republican proposing that there be a law that anyone who travels in interstate commerce to attend an outdoor event that engaged in disorderly conduct would now be a federal offense. You would have the heavy hand of federal law enforcement. And what I want to focus on as a major threat to liberty is, in fact, the tremendous expansion of federal criminal law, especially since the 1970s, such that I can literally say, and I can establish it, that everyone in this room can be indicted for some federal offense. And that is no exaggeration, and any prosecutor or criminal defense attorney and most federal judges know this, and they've said it in my presence, and anybody involved knows this. How does this come about? Well, because otherwise sane, rational Republicans have, under the stampede of media attention, turned us all into federal criminals. And so in the post-Enron era, just to give an example, we are imposing all kinds of federal criminal regulations that not only are aimed at the truly guilty, but will catch the truly innocent. Republicans are generally opposed to regulation, but if you take that same regulation and you add a criminal penalty for it, they will adopt it. Well, this is not just bad policy. As Judge Boggs mentioned, we have to identify where the threat to the rule of law is. There are three major threats here. One is the problem of fair notice, which is what Joe Johnston focused on yesterday morning. Two is the problem of mental element or culpability, which Ed Meese mentioned in his talk. And three is the general problem that a number of people have addressed, the problem or the infringements on both federalism and separation of powers. Now, why do I focus on 1970? Well, the growth of federal criminal law has occurred since really after the Civil War. And like most things, the problem begins in Louisiana. You remember yesterday there was talk about substantive due process, and the two cases were the Slaughterhouse case and Allgaier versus Louisiana. Louisiana is very overly represented in major Supreme Court cases for the size of the state. And I've always said that that is due to the fact of the civil law system, and we've really never been integrated into the United States, and we resist becoming simply another common law jurisdiction. In any event, in something that was very much like the proposed law that I mentioned to you about coming into Louisiana for disorderly conduct, what really happened was at the end of the 19th century, many religiously oriented people wanted to cure the problem of gambling in the United States, and at that time it existed only in Louisiana. So of course they passed a federal law to deal with it, and that was the Lottery Act. Now, it turns out that the people of Louisiana threw out the lottery on their own without the help of the federal government. But since the 1890s, the federal government, until the 1970s, focused primarily on gambling, and most of those laws were aimed at Louisiana. But the key was not that particular law. The key was what the U.S. Supreme Court did with it. Congress actually passed the law in such a way that was consistent with federalism. Namely, it didn't say that Louisiana couldn't have gambling. It said that Louisiana could not export gambling. But the Supreme Court thought that gambling was a bad thing and therefore said that as long as Congress was engaged in stamping out bad things, then therefore they had the right to engage in such criminal laws. That began enacting such criminal laws. That began a trend of creating more federal criminal laws. Now, not all of these federal criminal laws were bad, and basically until the 1970s, there wasn't much of a problem. There wasn't much of a problem because the Warren Court, of all things, the Warren Court would restrictively interpret these federal laws in order, they said, to avoid constitutional problems. In other words, even the expansive New Deal judges understood that there was a fundamental difference between commerce under the Commerce Clause and criminal law under the Commerce Clause. But as Judge previously Professor John Noonan pointed out in his book on bribes, since about 1970, the Justice Department and federal judges took it on themselves to expand federal criminal law interpretation in order to, quote, root out corruption. And where this comes in to play is not only the expansion of the coverage and jurisdiction of federal statutes, but notably on the question of mens rea. Why is this a problem for separation of powers? It's a problem because we have a fundamental rule. Beginning of the Republic that there is no federal common law of crimes, and therefore Congress has to pass statutes. As Chief Justice Marshall said, the rule of strict construction is not simply a common law rule. It is a requirement of separation of powers that the Congress define the criminal laws. But in fact, that has not been happening. Congress creates rather broad laws that are basically written by Justice Department lawyers, passed by Congress, aggressively interpreted and applied by the Justice Department, and until the Supreme Court in Lopez and Morrison started cutting back on this, these were being aggressively and expansively interpreted. Since 1970, from 1970 to 1999, 30% of all federal criminal laws passed since the beginning of the Republic were passed in those years. 30%. Now the problem with this is that many of these, as Ed Meese pointed out, are regulations. They are not really matters that the conduct is wrong, it is that you fail to do something in a certain way. If you are in the healthcare field, for instance, you have to deal with 100,000 pages of regulations. 100,000 pages of regulations. Talk about a notice problem. That is it. Not only do you not know what is and isn't against the law, if you get to read the statute and you find it, it's like interpreting the Internal Revenue Code, but with the additional problem that increasingly, especially in environmental crimes, we are talking about strict liability offenses where any mistake, no matter how innocent, can be a crime. And especially in environmental areas, you have this kind of scenario. You have an employee who violates company policy, violates federal law, the prosecutor comes in, offers immunity to that person, they plead against, they cooperate, the Justice Department indicts or threats to indict not only the corporation but a manager who was not responsible. The corporation, not to sacrifice the manager, pleads guilty as the corporation in order to save the manager. And all of this kind of coercion is going on and on. Why? If I had time, which I don't, I would read the quote from the general counsel of the Treasury Department at the Federalist Society meeting in November, where he said they deliberately adopted strict liability and money laundering so that they could go into banks and say, we know you're innocent and we won't indict you as long as you cooperate. And he said, what we want are codes of conduct from you. Codes of conduct is the key. It started out in federal sentencing. It is now a factor of consideration for indictment. The problem for the feds is that despite all of the criminal law, the reality is that federal courts can only actually prosecute 5% of the crime nationwide because there are a limited number of life-tenured judges, fortunately.
Even fewer on good behavior.
And because of that, there is a great deal of discretion in terms of who is and is not prosecuted. But in order to effectively control what they are doing is going in by way of threat and using codes of conduct. The key about codes of conduct is that the federal government is now using this as a way to completely regulate corporations that they could not do because corporations are incorporated at the state level. We are moving from a notion that our liberty is based on a proscriptive view. That is, we tell you what you can't do. Now we are going into a regime increasingly where it is prescriptive. Federal agencies are telling you at the threat of criminal prosecution what you must do. In that kind of an environment, everyone is a federal criminal, and when everyone is a federal criminal, no one is a criminal. Crime loses its stigma. And when people know that they can be unfairly tagged as criminals, they lose the respect for the power behind it, and that power loses its legitimacy. Thank you.